And then when I hit go live for some reason today, a little spinny thing spun a lot longer than normal. Hopefully that will be the end of our technical gremlins today. I've got a great show for you guys today. I'm going to bring on David Steltzer, and he is going to talk to you about something called the Azure Standard, which is a nationwide farm delivery service working with family farms, delivering the kind of food that you probably want to buy and consume beyond what you can grow for yourself. And I've always said that the biggest challenge of farming today isn't growing food. It's after you grow the food, getting it to market and selling it to the customers that actually want to buy it. And that is generally accomplished in the big food space through a distribution system that is tightly controlled. And of all the people in that system, do you know who makes the least amount of profit on the sale? The person that produces the food. That's just how that works. They're at the bottom, and if they're into, you know, farming grains and main crops, they're probably only surviving in our current system due to subsidy. And this is a shame because there's a lot of people out there that want to buy better food, and, you know, maybe they go to a farmer's market and everybody has tomatoes and peppers and they're growing tomatoes and peppers. I love farmer's markets, but they're not a one-stop, all-shop type of thing, and they generally don't keep a household full of food. We should support them, but it's just not enough in of itself. So a program like this is something I think is going to hit deeply into the wants, desires, and emotions of this audience. We've talked about food freedom now for, 18 years we've been doing this show together, and I don't think we let more than 4 or 5 episodes go by without at least touching on this subject. And that's a long time. And so I really like what David's doing, and we'll have him on in just a minute to talk about it and tell you more about it. Before we do, though, let's go ahead and recognize our sponsors for today. Sponsor of the day number one today is K9Academy.us. That is Joel Ryle's operation. You know, Joel's a sponsor of the show. He is an MSB partner. He is a personal friend. He's a member of our expert council. He's given a lot to this community. And he has something available for you that could be one of the biggest gifts you could ever give yourself, and that is a training library of videos that will teach you how to be a better steward as the owner and master of the dogs in your home to make sure that your dog is, you know, a good citizen of the home, one that doesn't jump on, you know, company, or if they're a homestead dog, doesn't eat your chickens, doesn't run away, actually listens to you. I've worked with people and dogs for a long time myself, and I've found one thing to always be true. It's never the dog that's the problem. It's the method and the training of the dog's the problem. Now, depending on how far that's gone or where the dog came from and what its background is, it might be a bigger challenge with some dogs than others. But in the end, it comes down to the person that's doing the training. Our dogs are members of our family, but first we must be the pack leader. You'll learn how to do that at Joel's site, K9Academy.us. And also remember, you can go there. He has a thing called the Problem Solving Library. It's basically a 5-part free course so that you can give it a shot and see if it's right for you. Next up today, our newest sponsor. I mean, just our newest sponsor, and we don't take them very often because they stick around a long time. We have limited spots. But when I was approached by the Case Place, and you know, I found out that these guys are actually selling things like cases from Pelican, Hardig, and SKB for up to 80% off retail, and their minimum discount is 50% off retail. And they said, yeah, we'll also do a discount for your members of an additional 10%, and your non-members can still get an additional 5%. It's like, yeah, let's get you signed up right away. And I checked their background. They actually started selling on eBay. They have thousands of positive reviews, 5-star reviews on eBay from years of selling these products before they formalized it into a, you know, kind of, let's say, a proper wholesale company. Check these guys out. And again, if you are an MSB member, remember, we just added them to our members program, so you get that additional discount. You know, sometimes people tell me that you join my members program and you don't do it for the discounts. You do it to support the show since it's so inexpensive. I appreciate that, and I thank you, and so does my family. Trust me, I've been able to do this show almost 20 years now because of it. However, it makes it easier for me to get you guys better discounts if you actually patronize the people that give the discounts. And if you're going to buy from them anyway, please take the discount. I never wanted to run this show on charity. I never will run it on charity. In the very beginning, when I started out in my car doing this, I literally had people that find out my email and send me PayPal money for just, hey, I like what you're doing here, and I sent it back. I don't do business that way. I believe in value for value, and that's why I have the sponsors that I do, because they do as well. With that, I want to introduce our special guest, David Steltzer. I hope I said that right. David, welcome to the show, man.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
I'm very happy to have you on. I love what you're doing with the Azure Standard. Can we start off with, though, because you're not someone that just, like, looked at it strictly through the entrepreneur's lens and said, I see a problem here, I'm going to create a solution for it. That's always valuable, but you actually have a farming background yourself. What inspired your family to move away from conventional farming practice? Honestly, when I look back at it and see your timeline, this was decades before organic gardening became mainstream. It was around, but it wasn't a mainstream thing.
Yeah, we were organic way before organic was cool, as they say. yeah, so that started with, you know, my family's been in farming, you know, multi-generationally, I don't know, all the way back to Adam, far as I know. All of my, you know, we're in it deep, right?
Yeah.
So, but my family, like everybody else, they were farming conventionally using the chemicals, but this is way back, you know, 40 years ago. And, I was a little bit of a weirdo because when I was born, I had not immediately, but by the time I was like 6 months old, I developed all kinds of health issues. Primarily respiratory. My earliest memories in life are laying on the couch wondering if I could catch my next breath. So my parents tried every medical thing they could think of. Nothing was working. Nobody really gave any hope. Probably wouldn't, you know, my lungs were going to fill up with scar tissue and I probably would die pretty quick. Basically the hope they got. They finally ended up, and I have no idea how they figured it out, but they found a naturopathic doctor. This was before naturopaths were very frequent either. They took me to this naturopath. He gives them a wholesale order of diet change. So he tells my parents to, hey, throw out every white anything, so to speak, in your house. Get rid of the white sugar. Get rid of the white flour. Get rid of the Crisco, the margarine, all that kind of stuff, the standard table salt, all of it. And my parents believed them. But my life was pretty much at stake. Mm-hmm. And so they actually did. And he said, furthermore, with me, I was never to have a grain of refined sugar in my diet at all. And I had to, and also at the time, had to go off of dairy. So my diet was pretty restricted, but it set something in motion for our family. And crazy thing was, too, my grandfather had to retire at 55 from farming because he had heart trouble so bad. Mm. And so after the diet change, it was changed and he, you know, it was changed for him as well because they changed it in the whole household. I got well and granddad got well too without as a side effect. Now he's, you know, and he got well for real. I mean, he went back to farming. Oh, wow. In fact, he was killed in a farming accident when he was in his mid 70s and he had retired at 55 and been sick for almost 8 to 10 years. And then he recovered his health and went back to farming again. And it took a little while. It wasn't instant. I didn't recover in a day, but over the course of about a year, I recovered my health as well. And I still have to be very careful about what I eat.
Sure.
But that changed the trajectory of our family's diet. And we saw all the rest. I mean, all the winter flus and all the stuff that they had always been plagued with began to go away. And so my parents were really sold on diet. This diet thing makes a difference. Eating unrefined food directly, you know, mostly from the garden, which was organic by default.
Sure.
Even though they were farming conventionally, I mean, they were putting all the chemicals on the farm, but they didn't think about it in the garden. I mean, because it was fine. And then my dad, he actually got to thinking about the chemicals that were in agriculture. And one day he was up to his armpits in treated wheat. It was like the seed is pink because it's poison, right?
Yeah.
And so he wrote to the seed company and asked them what was on the wheat. What was the poison that was on the wheat? They had to write anyway. It took a while for them to get the answer, but they finally come back with the answer. It's almost pure mercury. And even in the 70s, we knew that mercury was a heavy metal that did not go out of the body instantly. This was a problem. And here he is, you know, treating it as if it's nothing. And so he ended up making up his mind right then and there that he was never going to put chemicals on our farm again. And he didn't. That was for real. He was a stubborn guy, and it wasn't always easy.
When you guys made that initial dietary change, what is it as simple as don't eat anything that's, let's say, conventionally produced, so organic or local or whatever, and get rid of white stuff? Was that pretty much the change that was made?
Pretty much. So we went away we didn't eat any refined foods that contained any of those things.
Okay.
So white flour, white sugar, you know,
Crisco, or a box that margarine with that in it, right?
Anything that contained that as well. And at the same time, eat more lean meats and vegetables, right? So we increased the size of the garden, and we still ate grains, but we bought a flour mill, little grinder, kitchen mill, and started grinding our own whole wheat flour because we wouldn't eat white flour anymore. Well, I guess we're wheat farmers. I mean, it's one of the things we grow. So we just ground some of our own wheat. Dad actually set aside a little field, one of his better fields. He said, we're going to put the bread wheat in here because we usually raise soft white for the market, you know, for the noodle wheat. He bought some seed and he did this little, I think it was like a 5 or 10 acre parcel this is for the family, right?
Oh, wow.
And we baked bread out of that wheat. So it was completely, we changed our diet in a very, very real way. But it wasn't like, you know, we went on some special diet. It wasn't carnivore. It wasn't keto. It wasn't anything like that. It was just
get rid of everything white and all the refined crap and all the stuff with chemicals. That was the big thing. My Asperger's will drive me insane if I don't ask this, as you said, everything white. Did that include potatoes, or was that like an exception?
Well, potatoes, we still ate organic potatoes, but the funny thing is Dad, he started using purple potatoes too.
Okay. All right.
But hey, it wasn't.
But basically, when you say white,
because it's white.
When you say white, really what you mean is anything that was made white.
That was bleached white,
made
white by refining. That's the way, you know, it's more complicated than that now.
Yeah.
And I'd be happy to talk about it. But that's what the naturopath told my parents. And that was all it took to turn around my health and my family's health, my granddad.
And in some ways, it probably would even be more effective to go just that short back then, because for all the problems we had with our food back then, it wasn't as bad as it is today.
Yeah, we didn't have glyphosates yet and things like that we have to deal with today. But that was what he said. I mean, remember, this is back in the 60s, so this is not, you know, not exactly modern. So because it took Dad a few years, so it was 73 before he did this thing with the grain. And that was the last year chemicals ever went on our farm.
I'm just going to real quick pause here before we go on to the next question I have for you, just to recognize something here. We've got two people in a row that are Azure customers. And both are people that I know from my audience long term. Aaron here and here at Happy House, both of them are stating that they've been customers of Azure for a while. I think that's kind of cool when that lines up that way. So I just wanted to recognize those and let you know you have some fans here that know
you. Awesome. Well, thank you for being a part of the Azure community.
How did the challenges your family faced ultimately lead you to create Azure?
Well, that's many years later. Originally, Dad ended up getting a contract with Bob's Red Mill, who you probably heard of the brand.
Yep.
Back then, he was organic. He believed in organic. But when his market shifted, he shifted. He wasn't quite as dedicated as Dad was. So we lost that market in the late 80s. And I was young and stupid at the time. I didn't realize all the challenges to doing direct marketing. So I said, hey, there has to be a way that we can do this. And so I tried to get into distribution. Of course, I hit that dead end wall. They don't want good things in distribution. So I said, hey, I can take this direct. So I just in my pickup, I started driving these little routes and I would go to these food co-ops and health food stores and stuff like that and deliver our grain. And I mean, it's mostly grain and flour then. So this is, the way that it started. And pretty soon I started getting, it was mostly friends and family early on, but they started saying, hey, you're going to Portland anyway, because I was going to deliver. And then I would go to like Eastern Washington or Eastern Oregon. They say, hey, can you bring me some nuts or some seeds or something from Portland? And I would say, well, sure. So I did that as favors for a while. And then I suddenly realized, hey, there is a need in the marketplace. People can't actually get good food in many parts of the country. And some of those parts of the country is where I'm going already. And so I began to, and I had more of an experience, and I wrote about that in the book, but we had I had a experience where I began to realize that I am here for a purpose. I need to, healthy food saved my life. And I know that. I mean, I would not be here today had my parents gone the conventional medical route. What can I do to serve others? Because these people need this, especially in these rural areas. And so I figured, hey, I want to create a standard that we're able, if I'm going to do this, I want to create a standard. And that's where I actually came up with the name Azure Standard. Azure is a color that's associated with law and justice and doing things right. So I wanted to create that standard in the marketing of food. And it was visionary at that time. I mean, I was just doing it out of the back of my pickup, right? And so that was, my wife and I sat down at an old typewriter word processor and made the first catalog. It was 3 pages folded over. And I did all the things that people had been asking me about and things that I thought I might want for our family. And I did 3 pages of products that I began to stock basically in my garage. That's where I pretty much started.
That is very cool, man. Like I said, the fact that a grower that's meeting a standard then has a market to plug into, that lets a farmer do what a farmer does best, produce food. Mm-hmm. We all need to market our own brands in some way, shape, or form, but farming's not easy. Any gardener could just think about scaling that up 40 or 400 or 4,000 acres, and you get a new appreciation for it. It's also dangerous work. You mentioned, unfortunately, your father died in an accident farming.
My grandfather, actually.
Oh, your grandfather. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But it just kind of shows that it's a hard, dangerous life in some ways. And to be able to know that there is a place for your product to go, that changes mm-hmm. the calculus, and it also changes the risk ratio as well, because there's a lot of conventional farmers. When I ask them why they're doing what they're doing, if you look at it with no knowledge of the industry, it doesn't seem to make sense. Once you know about things like crop insurance and when things have to go in and mm-hmm. grants and subsidies and requirements, you start to understand, like, you're sitting on, you know, $5 million worth of debt or something, and either you do it this way and you can survive, or you got a business. And so
a lot of them are stuck.
Yeah, yeah. But breaking off that piece, like your dad initially did for your own family, that's something that if you start realizing, well, I can break a little bit more off, and you can transition that way, that mm-hmm. gives opportunities to change a lot of what we're doing. I hear people all the time crying right now because, you know, so-and-so farmer sold his farm and moved to Florida, and they put solar panels on it or whatever. I'm like, man, you know, there is a point where people get tired, and if they don't have somebody in the family that wants to take over, you know, that's a reasonable exit for that individual. And I think if we can make farming profitable for people again, and in a way that's rewarding to them, where they know they're putting good food on people's plates, you know, we might have less kids deciding, I'd rather go be an aerospace engineer, not a farmer.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very real problem in rural areas. You get, I mean, in fact, they even have a name for it. It's called the brain drain. Mm. You get many rural areas, they call it, oh, you know, it's the brain drain. There's no, you know, hey, kid goes off to college. If they can get in a good college, they go off to college and they never come back. That's very real. And so we get, you know, many farmers are aging out. They're getting older. Occasionally a younger one will come back, but, yeah, it's a real problem. But the thing is, the system is rigged. It's very difficult. I mean, farmland is exceedingly expensive for the amount of, you know, the amount of money that you can make off of it. It's a very poor return on investment if you're buying the ground. If you inherit the ground, maybe it's a little bit better, but it's still a problem.
I mean, you inherit the farm, but you inherit the debt that the farm has.
A lot of times it comes together. Yeah. And this is, you know, it's a very real thing. And being able to pay that through crop insurance and subsidies and all of that kind of stuff, it's a, you know, it's what people have to do. But there's also an alternative. And that's what, you know, I have spent the last, you know, roughly 40 years of my life trying to do, is to create the end run, the system, the distribution model in America. It's rigged for specifically for big ag and big food processing plant companies. It's not. To get one SKU into national distribution today, two things have to be true. One is you have to have a profit margin of roughly 4x, four times the cost of ingredients, and you have to be willing to spend upwards of $500,000 per SKU to get that into retail, between the distribution, slotting fees, free fills, getting it into retail across the country. What farmer has that kind of money to be, you know, there's a lot of talk about, hey, be vertically integrated, be, you know, do value add, all of that. That's great, you know, and on small scale, it works. There's farmers markets, as you mentioned, there's places that you can, that, you know, are of some value in that space. But at mass market, if somebody has thousands of acres, that is almost a non-starter, because you can't, how do you get it sold? How do you sell your product? And that's what I experienced early on. This is almost impossible. And so I guess I'm maybe as stubborn as Dad was, but there has to be a way to do this. Mm. And it's not exactly that it's been easy. But what Azure has done is we've created an end run around traditional food distribution in the U.S., the way that it's distributed through mass market retail and through the big distributors, even in the health food space, there's only two distributors that do health food in the whole U.S. besides us. We're number three as far as size goes and reach. And the other two don't give a rip. They're both, you know, they're publicly traded companies. They're, wow. For profit, they'll distribute anything. That, sure. And the cost of getting it in is not much different than it is into regular mass market retail. It's expensive as heck. Yeah. And so that's, and the big food companies don't mind that. They like it that way because it limits the market to them, right?
Yeah, of course they do. People, this is rampant everywhere in private and public systems. Like, people think that, your congressman writes laws or whatever. No, lobbyists write laws and companies pay lobbyists. And so what's coming out of government and the restrictions on the market is exactly what the big companies want, because why would they pay for it if it's not what they want? Right. It's not like some required program. It's not like there's a law that says you have to have a lobbyist, right? So if you're paying somebody millions of dollars to get things done and you keep giving them money, then you know that they're getting done what you want done. The customer's always right. In the private systems, this is probably more rampant because it's easier to control and there's less visibility into it. And when I say everywhere, I mean everywhere, because, yeah, I've seen it in food, but my background was actually in computer networks, and I used to work for one of the largest manufacturers of testing equipment. Guess who sat on all the standards bodies? Our engineers, right? So this insider control of systems is everywhere. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Charlie Munger, but one thing Charlie Munger once said was, never question anything when you should be first thinking about incentives. And the incentives drive these markets, and it's a totalitarian control. And it's not for your benefit. It's not for the benefit of the farmer. It's not a system that's designed as efficiently as possible to distribute food. It's a system that's designed to make money for the people who control it. That's what it is. And it just so happens that it distributes food, because if it doesn't do it something, it can't make a money. So we're looking at it backwards, I think, a lot of times.
Yeah. So, and the motivation goes away to actually care about the value of the food. And so that's been my mission in life, because food saved my life. And is this connection? I want to connect the farmers that care about the quality of the food they're producing with consumers that care about the quality, because the farmer, they're holding out both hands. They really are, especially the independent farmers. One, how much do I have to pay for fuel, tractors, anything they have to get? On the other hand, they hold out, how much will you give me for my grain, my cattle, set by the Iowa Beef Council or set by the Chicago Board of Trade or something else? They have no control over the actual price that they get. The only thing they can control is quantity. And so the quality suffers big time. And that's what my mission is to change. We want to connect the farmers that care to the consumers that care, because there is both, and every consumer should care if they know what's good for them. And every farmer should care too, but neither one, a lot of them they don't understand.
Yeah.
They don't really understand what they're up against. The chemical companies have been feeding them a line, just like they've been feeding the public a line for many, many years. I mean, Bayer, Monsanto, they spend billions of dollars every year advertising to farmers how good their stuff is. And it's the exact stuff that's killing both the farmers and the consumers.
And the incentive thing, rears its head there. Like you said, they don't get paid for quality, so why would they care about it? I don't remember what documentary it was, but I remember they were talking to a guy who was farming, I think it was tomatoes in like hothouses. And I think he was in like out near West Texas somewhere. And he said, why do I care what it tastes like when they don't pay me any more for what it tastes like? And people would look at that and go, I can't believe that. But that's what you do. Anybody out there with a job, that's what you do at work. You do what they pay you to do, that's the incentive that you follow. If you're not going to go out of your way unless you're trying to move up or something, and there's a way up, that's a different incentive. And we have perverse incentives. And kind of that leads me to my next question. What are the problems you see in today's food systems, and what can families do to become more resilient about it? Because that seems to be the overriding mission of what you're doing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, the problems, I mean, we've kind of been talking about some of the problems. The problem is the reverse incentives to the, both the farmers and the incredible amount of money in the what's called the general food processing space. You know, according to the USDA website, it says that the farmer, of the average consumer dollar spent on food, the farmer gets 9 cents currently. Okay. The rest of that is eaten up in food processing and markups in distribution, brokerage, retail, et cetera. That's where that happens. So, here at Azure, the thing that I've tried to do as much as possible is end run that entire system. Let's take, you know, and yeah, no, I don't have all the nicely processed food. I mean, we do have some.
Yeah.
In fact, we do some processing, food processing. I mean, I've gotten into that. We grind flour and, you know, we have a bakery and we have a few things. You know, I have a candy factory. I have a cannery. I have a few, you know, food processing facilities. But the main thing is, you know, consumers are not going to pay near as much. And so we found that with families that really care about their health, so many of them are going to cook at home. And when you're able to cook at home, we can sell a way better organic ingredient, and your overall food bill will still be less than eating the highly processed stuff. But it does require actually preparing it at home. You have to actually be willing, you know, willing to cook, willing to, you know, to do those things. And, you know, and I think, you know, there's a future here, you know, at Azure at some point. You know, it's one thing at a time, but maybe we will do a little bit strong, you know, a little bit heavier food processing, because there is ways to do that and keep the integrity of the food. It's just not the easy way. But it doesn't really, if you're buying through Azure, if you have a family, you're cooking for your family and you're buying the bulk ingredients from Azure, or, you know, and there's a few other possibilities as well, but I feel like, you know, that's the one I'm involved with and know. You can buy flour, grains, you know, in order to bake a loaf of bread. So we're going to sell you a, you know, a 50-pound bag of flour for like $38 or something. Okay. So it's less than $1 a pound. You can make your own sourdough bread using the ingredients. You just only paid about 85 cents for a loaf of bread. If you're willing to do, because that's the only ingredient in a good sourdough bread is,
yeah,
flour and water and maybe a little salt, you know.
A sourdough starter, which you make with the flour. I mean,
you make, yeah, that with the flour. You're doing that yourself. So I'm not saying that it's not less work. I mean, if you're figuring your time's worth $100 an hour, maybe it doesn't add up. But how much is our health worth? And, you know, especially for a family, a stay-at-home mom, whatever, you're baking. And I just use that as an example, but it's true for almost all the things, you know. And who's going to be able to buy a loaf of bread for 90 cents? Can't, you know, you're not. And that's for high quality certified organic flour. We can even get, you know, for a little bit more, we can even go to Ancient Grains flour for $1.25 a loaf of bread. You can be making it out of spelt or spelt 9 corn or something like that.
Yeah.
If you're really, you know, super concerned about the quality of the grain that you're getting, and you still make that loaf of bread for way less than you could buy it for at any supermarket, even if it was some crazy, you know, poisonous bread like Wonder Bread or something. You know, it's not, there's not a, you know, that's the conception, is that, hey, if I'm going to eat high quality organic food, that I, you know, I'm going to have to spend a tremendous amount of money. And at the same time, because of the way we distribute that, I'm able to pay my farmer that grew that, or certified organic, but not just certified organic. You know, our standards are a little bit higher than that with their regenerative concepts, but I'm able to pay that farmer at least 4 to 5 times as much as he would get on the conventional market. Right now, wheat's going for roughly $5 to $6 a bushel. I pay my farmer somewhere around $18 to $25 a bushel, depending on his quality, and I'm still able to grind that into flour and sell that for less than $1 a pound at the retail level. And because everyone's
skipping steps inside that controlled system. They're just not there, so they don't incur the cost.
We don't incur the cost. There's no broker fee.
Yeah,
that's 5%. There's no extra 35% for the distributor. Plus, the retailer is going to take another 40%. We pulled all of that out. Plus, the processor, they're gonna get their cut. So, you know, I'm not, you know, is it cheaper? Well, maybe. I mean, you could buy some junky gold medal flour for, you know, the same price, or maybe even a little bit less in some cases at, you know, Walmart or Costco or something. But you're getting the high quality product for the price that you're getting, you know, the denatured stuff that's been completely screwed with. Anyway, that's the encouragement that I'd like to give on that question.
So I just let you know, we had another one of your customers show up named Heidi here, who I don't recognize her handle. She may be drawn in by your name, or she might be a regular listener to the show. I'm not sure, but that's 3 so far. So that actually ties into my next question for you pretty well, which is, how has the standard grown into like a nationwide food distribution network and stay true to its mission? It's amazing how much distribution reach you have.
Yeah. So one of the end runs that we did is, instead of going through traditional retail, and I'm not opposed to traditional retail, we have some traditional retail that we do. You know, we have partner stores, you know, mostly on the West Coast, but all throughout the country to some degree. But the big end run that we did was we created what we call community drop points. So we're still distributing in big trucks like any other distributor would distribute in, but instead of just backing up to every retail store, we're going into communities. This allows us to do remote retail or more remote rural areas as well. And so we have routes with the truck, and they deliver in every town or every community. And we have what we call community drops. It's just a location that, you know, we have a drop coordinator, somebody in that community. And this is on a volunteer basis. We don't pay them or anything. These are volunteers. They say, hey, I'd love to have a drop at my church or my, you know, Grange Hall or community center or the parking lot of, you know, on the corner of 5th and 32nd, you know, whatever works in that community. That's the way that we've been able to create the distribution model to take it to the consumer in almost every model. Mm. It's really important that, you know, that it's available in the model. A lot of places, I mean, it's only once a month. We're only delivering there every 4 weeks. The some places it's more frequent, you know, but every 4 weeks is really common. But people can fill up their pantries, get their grain, their flours, their nuts, beans, seeds, rices, oils, fats, you know, whatever it is that you use in your household at a higher quality. And then instead of us doing last mile delivery, which is exceedingly expensive, and that's what costs so much if you're going to ship it by UPS or FedEx or something, plus they can't keep temperature control. In our case, we have dual temp trucks. They're frozen. We have freezer, refrigerated. You can buy your cheese. You can buy, you know, your frozen fruits and vegetables, all of those kinds of things. And then we deliver to this centralized drop point. The folks show up at that spot and pick up their order. And it can be wherever the drop point coordinator tells us is a good spot, and we can get a truck into it. If those two things match, we're perfectly fine delivering there. The most common is actually churches. We deliver to more churches probably than any other one place, because usually during the week they're not really being used anyway. And they, oh, yeah, sure, deliver to deliver to the church. And usually they have a big parking lot, but, you know.
Gotcha, man. Can you talk a little bit about the role healthy soil plays in all this? I always tell people I'm known as a pretty damn good gardener. My friends call me the pepper whisperer. And how do you grow these plants? And I always respond with, the plants grow themselves. I take care of the soil.
Yeah, well, and that's the foundation of organic farming. And that's where, that's where my life very first began. When we began to farm organically, we realized soil is not something to hold up the plants. The soil is a living organism. There are more microorganisms, mostly bacteria, but bacterial, fungal, protozoa, et cetera, all the way up the food chain. But there's more in one handful of soil than there are humans on Earth. There's literally billions of organisms, living organisms in the soil. But soil is very similar to our body's digestive system. You know, we wouldn't be able to live without a whole bunch of bacteria in our, in our bodies to break down our food and to create something that's digestible. And the same is true with the soil. The soil is a living, breathing organism. And the job of those organisms are to create, to take the soil that's there and in any plant matter that's died or whatever that goes back in. But I tell you what, those organisms then are what feeds the plant. You know, remember, in a plant is the only thing on Earth that can create energy. Everything, it's the only thing that can turn. Well, I guess we have photocells, solar panels now.
Yeah.
But a plant, as far as life goes, the only living thing that can do that. We can't do that. A plant, through a photosynthetic process, takes water and sunlight and turns it into sugars. And I'm using that term loosely. It's not what we consider refined sugar, but that sugar is then by the plant turned into cellulose, proteins, and fats. That is what becomes the building block of energy for life. A healthy plant, not only does it turn that into those parts that build it, but it also exudes sugar through the roots into the soil that feeds the microbes that are in the soil. In turn, the microbes in the soil turn the nutrients that are not bioavailable into available for the plant to use. Nitrogen being one of them. Nitrogen it's readily available. The air is loaded with nitrogen. In fact, I think it's the second most common substance in the air. It's just not bioavailable for the plant. Once the microorganism converts that to a bioavailable nitrate, which is exactly what they do, then it becomes available for the plant. But while they're converting the nitrate, they're converting all the other minerals that that plant needs at the same time. You know, us as humans, we need 72 mineral or 72 nutrients. At least that's the latest. I think it might be a little bit more than that now. Most farmers only do three, N, P, and K. There's on a standard fertilizer bag, there's three things. For our health and for any animal for that matter, it's 72 minimum. Microbes are what does that. So that's what.
All right, guys, and I'll tell you right now, right at this point in the interview, he locked up and he dropped off, and there's a few minutes of me hemming and hawing trying to get him back on and figuring out what's going on the video. And if you're watching the video, that makes perfect sense, and you can get context of what's going on. If you had to listen to it in audio only with dramatically long pauses and things like that, you'd get really frustrated. So I figured I'd splice this in. There was actually wildfires in his area. You'll hear me talk about that when I find out about it during trying to carry the torch here. I did my best to continue to present his company fully so you'd understand what he does. I will be getting him back on the air as soon as is reasonably possible to finish up, and we'll work him in somewhere or something like that. And I also do cover quite a bit of some cool stuff going on with the show itself and the community as we go forward here. So you will not hear from our guest again for the rest of this episode. I figured this was better for the audio version than a bunch of blank space and not really understanding what's going on. So I apologize for it, even though I had no control over it. It certainly wasn't his fault either. And here we go back into how it was actually recorded live with all that stuff removed. Just reiterating what he's saying about the soil until we get him back here. It is absolutely the case that microbes are the key to getting the nutrients into the plants and thereby getting the nutrients into us. Even those of us who are hardly carnivore, you know, what does that cow eat? What does that sheep eat? What does that chicken eat? They eat plant life. And that plant life is therefore the base of our nutrients for everybody. And it is the microbes that make them available. When I was building the bioreactor compost course and the cover crop course for you guys, I did more research in those two courses on soil than I had done in the combined rest of my life. And I learned some interesting things. And one of those things is that in the average field today, the average conventionally farmed field, there is between 40 to 80 years of phosphorus for that farm to run. There's enough phosphorus there, in theory, for that farm to run for another 4 to 8 decades without adding any phosphorus. And farmers aren't stupid people. They don't spend money on things they don't need. So why are they putting more phosphorus on the field every year? And it's a very simple answer. That phosphorus that's on that field is bound up, and the plant simply can't get to it. Think of it like, I watched a movie one time, I don't remember what it was, but they left this guy in the desert to die, and they staked him out in 4 stakes in the middle of the desert, and they took a bottle of water, and they put it in his hand and walked away and left him there. The water's there, it'll save your life, but you can't get it in your mouth. In that particular movie, they gave him a glass bottle. He broke it and cut himself free. But you get my point. Like, you can be, or think of being stranded at sea, and you're on a lifeboat, and you run out of water, and you're surrounded by water, but you can't consume that water because it's so full of salt. And it's interesting that's a salt problem, because a lot of our problems on farms and in soils are related to salts, because it's mineral salts that they make these fertilizers out of. But so much of that is bound up. And without the biological activity in the soil to cut it loose, I don't know, there is no way for the plant to get at it. And, you know, one of my great mentors in life has been Jeff Lawton. And I remember Jeff, when he was talking about composting, he said, you know, it's basically either 0.5, 0.5, 0.5 in the nutrient profile up to a 1:1:1. Parts of nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. But it doesn't do much for the plant in the amounts that we use it in. is very low compared to even an organic fertilizer product. He said, because it's all about the microbes, and don't let anybody ever tell you anything different. And in everybody that I've talked to in all these years about soils, that is, it's always come back to the microbes. Or in a conversation I had with Matt Powers one time, what we came to the conclusion of together, you know, everybody talks about IMO, indigenous microorganisms, IMO, and Korean natural farming, and JDAM, and stuff like that. Everything that works long term is a form of IMO. When you make bioreactor compost, it is a form of IMO. I'm going to real quick email David's contact here and let him know we'd like him back in. Just give me a second, guys. All right, hopefully that'll work. I'll try to carry the day here if it doesn't, and tell you a little bit more about Azure. When this application came to me here, I had really not heard of them before, and I feel kind of dumb now with how many people in this audience obviously have. But the website is azurestandard.com, and they have a tremendous amount of product available. This is not just like a one-off thing where you get, you know, like something like a butcher box that we used to do where you get one-off things. But they do meats, but they also do rices and flours and butters. And if you actually go into their shop area, it's just the food alone is like this giant list. And I might have to give a little advice on some components with e-commerce maybe. But there's just a tremendous amount available, and they have, you know, you join as a member, you can have things delivered. There is some regional distribution as well. There's a whole breakdown of how everything works, a great explainer video. And this is really just a company driven by a founder trying to do things the right way. What I really was kind of impressed by, and I hoped to actually get to talk to David about this, is the fact that when he started this, he said, you know, back in the 80s, I think, is when he started this. He was young and didn't know any better. Man, I'm going to tell you, there is so much value in being that person during that time of your life. And I want to encourage you guys that, you know, are in your 20s and you think you can do anything. There's a lot of older people that will tell you that'll never work. And 9 times out of 10, they'll be right. So take 10 freaking chances. Right? If 9 times out of 10, when you're told you can't, that person's actually right. All you have to do is take 10 chances until you find the one that matches your passion and matches the ability to get it done. And when you get something done that no one thinks you can get done, when you beat the odds that way, you really have something. You find yourself, you know, instead of a little fish in a big pond, you might be a little fish in a little pond. But you own the freaking pond. And Duck and Homestead here saying they also do animal feed. This is a great company. I really apologize for the fact that some technical issue got in the way here. If David, if you've got somebody monitoring this or anything, I promise you I didn't do it. Nobody's more disappointed in losing this than me. I'm going to try to talk a little bit more about some things for him. We'll give him some time to come back, and if he can't get back in, you know, they may have just had power go out at his place or something. I don't know. Because when I dropped him out of the screen and brought him back in, it went dark. So it may have just froze up with that image, and he might have been completely gone. For all we know, some idiot with a backhoe took out a cable TV line or something and shut down his internet. So but I want you guys to know about the book. I didn't have it originally set up as a topic of discussion today because I didn't get a link for it or anything in his guest application. And the book is not even out yet, but I'm definitely going to pre-order it today myself. I don't know exactly why, but it is not unified in its listing in that there's a hardcover and there's a Kindle. And the Kindle is like $28, and I'm sorry, the hardcover is like $28. And the Kindle is significantly less. Let's see if I can find that for you and get you a price on it real quick. $14.99 for the Kindle. And for some reason, they're not on a single page linked together. And I'll talk a little bit more about problems with Amazon linking things together here in a minute with my own book. But I definitely encourage you to, if you don't think about becoming an Azure member yet today, maybe pre-order this book, because this is an amazing story of someone, you know, who fought the system and actually beat it. One of the things I said in my comments, so I didn't interrupt David, was that the guy used the term end run like 10 times in like 5 minutes. This is a statist jujitsu master. And, you know, Aaron here, and if you guys that are customers of Azure have things to tell me about them, send that to me. I'll read it because that's good content until we either get him back or give up. Aaron says their chocolate sauce for chocolate milk is great. Raw milk and that for kids for breakfast. That's, you know, if you're going to give them chocolate milk, I guess that's the way to get it. And that means they're also doing some importing, because I don't know anybody growing chocolate in America. Right. Definitely not the lower 48 or Alaska. Maybe you can grow chocolate in Hawaii. I don't know. I don't think it's a big product coming out. I've never heard of Hawaiian chocolate. I'm sure if they were growing it, we would hear about it. So they do some importing of some probably very ethically sourced stuff as well. Azure also, in his notes I have, they allow farmland to rest every seventh year. That's actually an ancient principle. That's a biblical principle. That is far back as farming goes, into allow resting of the land. I'd like to hear David talk about that, but I'll just bring up that they do that. And this does fit with preparedness. If you think back, not so long ago during the COVID years of nonsense, there was a huge concern about the food supply. And we went from an overabundance where we were destroying food, burying animals, to a shortage really fast, because the people running things have no idea what they're doing. But the other thing that we found out is all of a sudden the farmers were struggling, because we ended up with the whole conflict in Ukraine arising and commingling with all this and sanctions, et cetera. And all of a sudden we couldn't get urea into the United States, because our main source of it was Russia, and it's used in the production of fertilizer. So we're dependent on somebody that we insist on turning into an adversary that would be happy to be an ally, by the way. And all of a sudden, our ability to feed a country that has more resources, more natural resources in abundance, and more farmland, you know, when I say farmland, I'm talking about highly productive farmland than just about any other country in the world does. And we're worried about feeding ourselves because we basically can't get chemical piss from Russia. So fixing the soil and giving farmers a way to follow the incentive of making money, which is what they're not in business just to feed you. I think the average farmer does care about feed, but you don't go out and do things just to feed other people. You pursue your own dreams and your own values. And the most important thing to you is keeping a roof over your head, food on your table, and your family taken care of. Farmers are the same. So if that farmer can't come out from under the thumb of Big Ag without losing everything he has, he's not even going to try to do it. And I don't blame him. But if we can incentivize farmers to actually do the type of thing that Azure's doing while repairing our soil, not just feeding us better quality food, but while fixing the dadgone soil that we all depend on to live, our preparedness as a nation, our preparedness as a society goes up, and it goes up a great deal. So I want to make sure that, you know, we kind of take all of that in. And I really, it sucks that I didn't get to ask him questions about his book. I want to know more about his book. And I don't know what happened. I'm checking over here real quick on my other machine to see if I've got an answer from his assistant. And the fact that I haven't tells me that they're probably in the same place and the internet's down. Because in leading up to this, every time I emailed this person or my wife emailed this person, the response was like that. So I think that we will head toward wrapping up here, because if they don't have internet, they don't have internet. And where they're located, they probably don't have enough, you know, coverage to tether a cell phone. Maybe they don't know how to do it either. But I just want to encourage everybody to learn more about this, and I commit to you that I will get him back. I don't think I'm going to get him back today, but I will get him back on the air. I will not make him wait for another spot to open. I do have some things coming up with some travel, so it may not be immediate. But what I'm going to do right now to buy a little more time, and I obviously cannot answer these questions for him, but there are like three questions came in from the audience. And what I'll do is I'll answer those questions as me. I won't pretend to speak for David because I can't do that. If I can, anyway. Question, is everything from Azure organic? As far as I know, yes, or a higher standard. Some product that comes in internationally may not be certified by USDA as organic and still be a higher quality. I don't know how they handle that. But everything that I looked at on the site and everything that I can see from the site, and I'm going to also say something about the USDA organic program. I'm glad it exists, but you can be compliant with it and you can still be abusing the land and you can still be abusing people. Jeff Lawton very famously brought to attention, you know, they're growing these organic carrots in the Baja Peninsula, which is the Baja California, basically. You go south out of California into Mexico, and that's where you end up in the Baja Peninsula. Very sandy soil. It's very good place to grow carrots. And he said the abuse of people there is unbelievable, and I won't go deep into it. So I am not enamored with USDA organic. I'm glad it's there. And many of the people that farm under that label are using it because they follow that incentive, and they are great farmers doing wonderful things. What I actually care about is how is the food produced? How is the soil taken care of? What is the quality of the food? How is the nutrient density of the food? And what isn't in the food that is in the commercial food? So I think that based on everything I know, those boxes are all being checked with an A+. Jody says, North Carolina customer here, love you guys. I heard there is an Ohio distribution center opening. When will that be? I'm ready for produce to not have to drive across the country. I can't answer that one for you at all, but I will tell you that there are opportunities to get involved with Azure that I'm going to dig into deeper. They have an Azure ambassador program where if you have the ability to refer people, you get a credit toward your own orders every month if you refer at least one new person a month. That's one option. And there may be options for kind of be on and help out with distribution and things like that as well. And one of the things to think about with that, and again, I haven't dug into this enough to be sure, but I'm thinking if you have a group of people that all are doing a common order and a manufacturer or a distributor can ship a big order to one place, that is much more efficient and lowers cost. So there may be an angle there, but definitely check out, again, Azure Standard, and it's azurestandard.com. And somebody asked if it had anything to do with Microsoft Azure. It does not. This predates that product. If anybody's infringing on terminology here, it would have been, you know, Bill Gates's folks. The Polar Bear says, what is a way to improve food quality cooking while keeping minimal effort and time commitments? I'm raising 4 kids. Try to figure out a way to buy more affordable vegetables, add variety while not breaking the bank or burning too much time. And you know, that is going to have a definitive piece is going to be, well, what do you want to feed your kids? You know, if you're like if you feed your kids breads, breads is not something I eat a lot of, but when I do eat bread, I eat real sourdough bread. Like what he said about that alone, that you can basically, if you make bread, you can do it for 85 cents a loaf. And you're busy, and you got 4 kids, and that's a different kind of busy, man. I understand. But to me, the cheat code for this is that you make up things on weekends, at least maybe not every day of the week, but for like certain days of the week. And it's a good idea to think about things like if you have activities and stuff, what is your days with the least amount of time for meal prep and stuff? And so if you have like 2 or 3 days of the week, that's where you're always short on time. Like you know, during baseball season between my grandson with baseball and my granddaughter with gymnastics, I'm amazed after vacationing with my son and daughter-in-law how late they eat dinner, how late they take showers before bed, and how late they go to bed. And I think they just have that circadian rhythm that way from this constant activity. And so I would say, you know, if nothing else, isolate the days with the least time, whatever number of days that is, meal prep in advance for those things. Because the products that they have, when I started looking at the pricing, they're not much more or in some cases less, again, if you'll cook food for yourself at home. And I will not get on anybody's case who says they're out of time with four kids. I have one. Oh, my God. And when my grandkids are here, we have two. And oh, my God. And maybe that's part of being older now. Like, I did this. I tagged out, you know. My son's 36 now. I shouldn't be chasing kids around and yelling at them and stuff anymore. But so I get it. But that would be kind of my strategy there, is to figure out, you know, how much do you need to prep? Okay, there's another question. I'm looking to see if there's any more questions here or anything y'all want me to comment about. But I think I've kind of run this as long as I can, trying to. Okay, hold on. We just heard. Let me see. Nicholas Roos, public relations. Herman was assistant. There's a major wildfire, and he has completely lost connection. We're sorry for the inconvenience. Well, bro's got wildfire, so let's send, you know, thoughts and prayers that way. So he won't be back on. I'll answer this in a minute. So we know he's not coming back. Aaron's saying that's a great. I'm going to steal that. I'm sure somebody else has said it more than a few times. But cook once, eat twice. That is something that I do a lot of. It's anything that's going to keep well, when we go to cook it, I cook at least twice the amount that we need for that day, and it doesn't take any longer. Right. Especially with things like soups, stews and stuff like that, like making a pot of soup or a stew that will feed however many people eat at your house once, and making enough to do it twice literally doesn't take any longer. Maybe a little bit more time doing some slicing and what have you. Get a good food processor. It's like buying back your time. Right. Stuff like that, tools that make things easier to do. And then if you're like, and I also get, so I got kids, and kids don't want to eat the same thing 2 or 3 days in a week, right? So what you do is, it's like copy canning backwards, right? It's like a manufacturing copy canning. So check how this works. Mom's going to make stew. So mom makes enough stew for two meals, not one. Mom takes half the stew, puts it in a Tupperware or a vacuum seal bag if you have a chamber vac or something like that, throws it in the freezer. Okay? That week, no time has been saved yet, but now that's laid up in the freezer. The next meal, you do the same thing. Maybe you skip a meal, you just cook for one night, or you go out or whatever it is, and the next day you do it again. All of a sudden, you start to build up a supply in the freezer. And then that way, you can then keep doing that, and you always have one you can go grab. It's home-cooked, and it wasn't what you ate yesterday. You ate it last week, and I'll tell you another thing, too. This is going to sound a little harsh, but I have been blown away with how parents allow kids to make decisions about what they're going to eat and when they're going to eat it. Because if you're Gen X, you know, that shit did not fly, okay, when we were kids. That did not fly when we were kids. You got it and you ate it, or you starved. And what did they tell you if you didn't want to eat it? I remember this one. There's starving kids in Africa that would love to have that food. I made a mistake one time. I think it's the only time my grandmother ever twisted my ear to where I thought it was going to come off my head. I said, well, then maybe you should pack it up and send it to them. That was a mistake I never made again. I'm pretty sure my right ear is a little bit different than my left. Maybe that's why I have the problem with the earpiece falls out of my left ear, but not my right. She twisted it so it stays in there. And that happened when I was like, I'm going to say eight years old. But hey, guys, I really appreciate y'all tuning in today. Again, the book that he has coming out, and right now it's only available on a pre-order, is called Seeds of Hope. And I'm going to pre-order that today. I'll probably pre-order it for Kindle. But I may order both. It may be one of those books I want to put on my bookshelf permanently. I generally read Kindle just because I can read it in the dark. But this looks like a book I'd want the hard copy of too. It'd be a good way to support. And again, let me pull up the website again here for you guys. It's called AzureStandard.com. Go back to the temporarily down for maintenance. That ain't good. I'm wondering if they self-host. I'm wondering there. So I don't know, man. I'm going to reach out to them after this, and hopefully they're going to be all right. Like I said, Nicholas, who is their PR guy, I'll read just exactly what he had to say. We just heard from his assistant that there are major wildfires near his farm, and he has completely lost connection. We're sorry for the inconvenience, but this is beyond our control. We'll be back in touch as soon as he's back online and we're able to reconnect with him. So that's the situation he's in. So hopefully it is just damage to infrastructure. And hopefully those guys aren't in any risk, because we can't afford to lose people like this. This is the kind of thing we need. A lot of you guys comment. Robin, who's here a lot, said Azure went down while I was looking for drops near me. So that's concerning. And but you know, a lot of you guys wonder why I'm not more politically active. I've been kind of harassed about that forever. Yeah, I mean, going way back to 2008. When I used to just talk about, sometimes I talked a little bit more about politics than I did today, and I would just refer to the election as the Ass Clown Circus. If you go all the way back then, Bush was finishing up his term, and Obama was running for his first term. And I don't remember if it was against McCain or Romney. I know both of them ran. I think it was Romney that had the – and I remember saying, you know, Obama's going to win. I don't like it any more than you do, but it's what's going to happen. It's going to be a landslide, and your vote won't matter. And I got a lot of hate for that. And I'll just ask you a question. If I had been more politically active at the time, would anything be different in the world today? And the answer is no. But I think what's made a difference to this audience over the years is teaching y'all how to grow your own food, how to build your own systems of resilience, how to build soil, right? How to build businesses. And if you want to be an activist, the way that David is being an activist with Azure is the way to be an activist. Change the incentives. You can vote all you want. They're just going to buy the new person you voted for. You can send somebody into government, lily white as the driven freaking snow, and the machine will destroy them in two terms or less. You want to know an example of this? And I'm telling you, I have a real-world example of this, real world. Marco Rubio. I don't want to be political today, but I got to do something with the time here, right? I said a long time ago, right when Rubio got appointed as Secretary of State, you know he's a swamp creature because he was voted in 99-0, almost minutes after the nomination was made. And when something's that bipartisan, you're dealing with a swamp creature. And what I said is, I don't know, but I think I know. This guy wasn't that guy when he got elected into the House originally, before he became a senator. I think he really wanted to do right by the people. Turns out a member of this audience knew him very closely. And this member of the audience is not political at all, but he's politically active. He's a wealthy individual. Built business in Florida, and was part of Marco's early career. And even after he got elected, Marco would have him in and sit down with him and talk to him about the things that he was concerned about and the people that originally got him into office were concerned about, till he hit the Senate. And this gentleman went to visit him and basically got about 5 minutes with him. And that was never, ever seen by him ever again. When he would go to see him, they're like, we don't have time. It's not the person, it's the system. The incentive always drives it. So if you want to be an activist, you have to change the incentive. And the incentive here is, we will sell you better food at the same price or close enough that it's going to be easy for you to do. so that you and your family can have higher quality food for about the same money or less. That's activism. And we're going to end run the freaking system that stole it from you in the first place. That's activism. You want to make a difference, go change something for people in the world and stop expecting people that you elect to do it for you because they're not going to. I didn't want to go there today, but hey, I got to do something to wrap this up and inspire y'all a bit. Again, when their website comes back up, we will dig more into it. I'm not really sure exactly what happened because the site is down, yeah? But we don't get a down site. We get a message. That's kind of strange. That's a weird thing. I'm not really sure how that would work because if you can put up that page, you should be able to put up a site. So that just might be coincidental. That might be like, you know, it's a date. I can tell you it's a database-driven site. The database might have had like a brain fart or something. So in any event, we got plenty of talent in this audience. If they need some help, we can get them some help once we hear from them again. I'm going to put David's website and all his links, including their Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and the page for the book. I don't know. What's the price for a truckload to be delivered? Hey, Alabama, how would I ever? I know I'm not them. I don't think David can answer that question. Truckload of what, where, when? I don't understand that question. And I'm not sure that you do either. A truckload of wheat? Or a truckload of cows, right? But I'm going to put all the resources in the show notes today, including links to both the Kindle and hard copy pre-orders for David's book. That would be great. I'm going to reach out to them and see exactly what's going on. And, you know, if they need any help, if we can arrange that as well. I'm going to wrap up now, though. I want to thank you guys for tuning in today. And, again, I apologize for the way things went. There's really not anything I can do about it. We certainly can't blame the guests for it. But you don't control things like wildfires. I do want to talk to you about the item of the day today real quick, if I can. I've been bringing this around quite a bit. Probably the last time I'll bring it around for a while. But I decided to bring it around today because as I was getting ready for the show today, I was putting it in my refrigerator. It is the Antelope rechargeable portable fan. It's a little plastic fan. Sells for about $14. It's a great little portable fan. You plug it in with a USB-C a charger, and so anything will charge it, and it works really good. It has four speeds. It's quiet. It's lightweight. Sits on your desk. You set it. You know, you put it. You know, take it to when you go out to a place or whatever where you're going to be a little bit too hot. And that's what it's designed for. But I learned about it from Alton Brown because I do love me some food, and I do like me some TV cooking shows. And Alton Brown's one of my all-time favorites. And I was watching a video from him when I was flying back here from Colorado. So Alton Brown told me about this little fan at about 32,000 feet, if I remember. I was watching a little short video with him. He's talking about cooking steak, and he was doing everything I do. You put salt on the steak. Maybe you throw some garlic powder or something on it for some seasoning and let osmosis do its thing. And you take the steak, and you put it on like a cooling rack. You nest that in a sheet pan. And you stick it in your refrigerator. You leave it there for 4 to 8 hours or even overnight. And what it does is it draws out extra moisture. It draws out extra myoglobin. But the big thing it does, it creates what's called a pellicle, a sticky-like, skin-like coating on the outside of the meat. And when you do this, you get, if you're cooking like a steak, you get a much better sear. If you're cooking chicken and you do that with the skin, you get a much crispier skin. If you are smoking, though, like you're doing a brisket or a pork shoulder, when you hear people say, like, the smoke is the sauce, when you hear a real pitmaster say that, that's what they're talking about because that smoke has something to cling to when you do that. And so he's doing all this, and I'm like, well, tell, and I'm being arrogant. I'm doing this in my head. I'm not acting like a crazy person on an airplane sitting in a seat yelling at the phone. I'm just like, well, tell, I'm thinking to myself, tell me something I don't know. He whips out that little fan and says, I like to put one of these in the refrigerator. And he starts explaining why. I'm like, I don't need to know why. I know why, because it doesn't get it, it's gonna have it dry off more, and it's gonna prevent the bottom of that steak from being wet. Because even when you get a good pellicle on the top, you flip it over and it's wet. And then when you go back to get it again, the bottom's wet again. That's just how it works. With the fan, it doesn't happen. The only reason I don't have it show it to you is because it's in the refrigerator right now, making a pellicle on two beautiful ribeyes that I personally processed. That's going to be for Dorothy and I to eat tonight. So I definitely recommend you pick one of these up. Next up, real quick, A little update on my grief with Laws of Life, Book 1, Ditch the System, Design Your Life, Second Edition. I have made some progress with Amazon, who are still being basically unhelpful turds. But at least you can find the dadgon soft copy of the book if you want it now. And the way this works, what I'm going to do, I'm bringing it up for you on the screen if you're in the video. So there we are. We're sitting there looking at the second edition of the book. If you read it, it says it's in the all-new second edition. It's got book one on the bottom, which the first edition did not have. And it's got all the options, Kindle, audio, hardcover, paperback. Watch what happens. If I click on hardcover, it goes over the hardcover edition. If I click on paperback, and this is the problem, it comes over here. And now you're looking at the first edition with all the errors and stuff in it. That's not the new one that you want. And I went round and round with Amazon and KDP for like a week over this. And I changed the description and underlined bold, do not buy this version of this book. That should help you out. And then I actually give you a link you can cut and paste until they got their shit together. But now they have at least done this. There's a newer edition of this item. And if you click that link, it will take you to the right copy. So I'm not going to say that they did a great job here, but at least they've done something. They've also pulled a dirty trick. I jacked the price up on the first edition so nobody would buy it. And they auto-discounted it to a dollar less than the first edition, and apparently there's nothing I can do about that. Somewhere in the mile-long bullshit of KDP terms, it says that, so it is what it is. Last but not least, I want to remind you guys, if you want to really ramp up your freedom in your life, there is nothing you can do for yourself better than build a business, and doing it today is easier than it's ever been. Not only do you have the internet that we've had for, you know, as in its current form for, what, 25 to 30 years now. Now you have AI. But you need someone that knows how to build a business to teach you how to use AI to build a business. If you already have a business, even better because you have a starting point. But we put together the Become Dangerous with ChatGPT AI course to help you build that freedom in your life. We have run that course four times. We only take 100 students per round. That's 400 people that we have put through that course. And about the only thing we've heard back from those people is praise for how amazing it is. Those aren't my words. Those are the students' words. It is done in a very unique manner, I think, in the way that we put it together. We use a private Telegram group. We drop the instructions for that day's work every day, first thing in the morning. That means you have all day to do it. And then we run that Monday through Friday, and you have the weekends off or to catch up because sometimes people fall behind. And then we do that for 8 total weeks. It's a 40-day course, but it takes, 48 days to actually get through it because you have your weekends off. And it is something I think that when people originally saw us doing it, they felt that all it would be is how to market. It is not only how to market. That is a huge part of it. But it is how to communicate what your business is in a way that actually makes sense to people. It is how to build structure into your business. It's how to make your business scalable. I spent a lot of my life as a consultant. When I left sales and I went into marketing, I had a very brief period where I had to take a step back to do it. And then I met Neil Franklin. And we built a company together called Franklin Spirico Media. We ran that company together for almost 6 years. We had clients, the current president of the United States, he wasn't in politics yet, don't blame me for anything he's done in politics, but the current president of the United States, Donald Trump, was one of our clients. We worked with major brands, huge brands. You look up Globe Ranger, it's one of the brands we worked with, for instance. And I was the consultant to these brands. I've taken what I used to do for these companies, and I've condensed it into basically a boot camp that teaches you how to use AI to do it for yourself. And, you know, I was asked to do something like this for years, and I wouldn't do it. I'll tell you two reasons I wouldn't do it. One, the most miserable thing for me as a consultant, because I really cared about people, was working really hard on a plan for them, have them pay me for it. I got my money. Why do I care? Because I care. That's why I'm good. and then watch them not do it or do half of it and bitch about getting half the results. And my response to that was always, it's a comprehensive plan. You're lucky you got any results at all by doing half of it. Imagine if you did the other half. So I didn't like doing it. I didn't like putting my heart and soul into trying to help somebody, watch them not use what I gave them. But there was another reason. When I was being asked to do it as a podcaster, yeah, I could roll some shit up and charge you guys $1,000, $995 for a series of videos telling you shit that's useful. But how's it different from what anybody else is doing? To make my methodology actually work for people, I needed a leverage tool. And it wasn't until I realized the full potential of advisory AI, because that's what we're using here. You're still in control the way I teach you how to do this. You are always in control. You always own the decision. You're not accepting hallucinations, right? You're in command. You're turning AI into a team to build a business with so that you can actually do the things. Now, I'm not going to say you will get the kind of results you'd get from me being, you know, in the trenches with your company for a month and leaving you with a comprehensive plan. I can only do so much, but I can get you 80% of the way there. And the truth is, back when I was doing this, we wouldn't talk to you for less than a $20,000 initial retainer. Literally, other than a five-minute phone call to assess you and for you to assess us, to pick up and do anything was a minimum $20,000 fee. And this course is $300. And I put as much of what I know into it as was possible and practical for the individual. If you've taken this course, you know what I'm telling you is the truth. If you haven't, you're going to want to try to get in this time. And what you need to do is you need to go to jackslaws.com or just use the link in today's show. And if you just go to the site itself, all you have to do is go up to the top of the site and you'll see courses and pick the Master Become Dangerous with Chat GPT course, right? And when you do, you can join the wait list because that's how it's going to work. This course goes on sale the Monday of the last week of August. Do not think you're going to remember that because you're not going to. If you pre-register for the course, about a week out, we'll say, hey, it's coming. And then a couple days out, we'll say, hey, it's coming. And then on that Monday morning, we will send an email out. I think 8 a.m. is when we do it. And you click the link, and it's a race. It's a countdown. And we have everything set up so we won't have any log jams in the sign-up process. Basically, you go into a queue like Ticketmaster because Tom's a freaking genius and figure out how to do that. And so you wait your turn in queue, but once you're in, you're in. And then once that queue cleans out, if there's any seats left, we'll open it up again. But that usually doesn't happen. It sells out. So if you want to be in this course, then you need to get pre-registered now. And when I say now, if you're listening to me live, go do it. Go do it. You can decide if you actually want to be – if you obviously want to spend the money later, but if you want the chance, don't waste your time. Go do it. It doesn't cost anything to pre-register, and we don't harass you or anything. We send you just literally a few emails reminding you, and you can opt out any time. And then I do want to say something for people who have already taken the course. I got an email today, and I didn't really get a chance to read it before the interview fully, but it was basically – you know, we have an alumni group. And in that alumni group, we repost all the work every day during the course. And then you have alumni that have all been through the course and they can all work together. And they were saying that sometimes they have some issues keeping up with the actual course because maybe it takes longer for me or Tom to move the content over. If you and this is another reason to sign up and take it. You can take it as many times as you want. Yes, we cap the number of people in the course itself that are new. We see veterans retaking the course. We call them big brothers and sisters. You're an asset. Anybody who has taken the course, when the new course launches, is free to join the Telegram group for the new course. You can completely retake the course. And I'll tell you something, some of you should. Because if you have a business that's like a multi-revenue stream business and you really focused on stream A, retake it and the second time focus on a different product set. That's a benefit. It's a lifetime benefit you have from taking the course once. All right, I went way longer than I planned with that, but it is what it is. Somebody says it's a bit odd The phone call thing from the drop hostess. Okay, that's not what I thought it was. So that's some of y'all talking amongst yourselves. Anyway, tomorrow will be an expert counsel Q&A show for the week. And so tune in for that, and then next week we'll do it all again. I really appreciate everybody for tuning in today. Again, I apologize for what happened. I know I really don't need to apologize for it because I didn't do it. And the guest doesn't need to apologize for it because he didn't do it either. I'm sorry that it happened. I guess it'd be a better way to put it because that's more genuine. You apologize for things you're responsible for. Hopefully I did a good job for you carrying the thing for about another 30 minutes after you lost the guest. Thank you for tuning in. I'll catch you tomorrow.
Are they gonna bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.